G'day, I'm Woz.
And I'm Nick, sometimes Coxie, mostly Nick.
This is the Tradies in Business podcast, and we're here to share a bunch of tips, ideas, tactics that you can put in place to get change happening in your trade business right now.
If you're really lucky, we're going to entertain you with a few mum jokes, and more importantly, a bunch of fantastic guests that will educate you in all things you need to know about trade business, but we do promise to do it with a whole bunch of fun along the way.
I'm a self-confessed idiot, so strap yourself in and enjoy another episode.
Hello, Warwick.
Hello, Nick. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode. You already know which podcast this is because you listen to every single one because you're so dedicated to improving yourself by consuming the content that Coxie and I create. Why am I laughing as I say that, Nick?
I don't know. I think that I should have gone with the joke after all.
That would have been funnier than me.
No. That was a very serious start to our podcast today, and perhaps that's right in tune with where we need to be today. It's a far more serious conversation than we sometimes have, at the very least.
Well, I'm looking forward to chatting with our guest who's sitting here being very quiet, as he's been instructed. And I'm looking forward to this chat because in our sort of pre-conversation that we have with our guests before we hit record, today's guest has already put me on the spot and made me commit to being the best dad that I can be for my boy when he starts school. So I'm like, hang on a second, this bloke's already rolling out the coaching. So I'm looking forward to our chat with Trevor Farmer. Welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure, mate, an absolute pleasure.
Now, is that how you roll, mate? You just meet someone brand new and you're like, righto, mate, I need you to commit to something for me. Is that how you roll when you meet people?
Okay, do you want to go on some coaching on that? Well, we can do that now. I'm going to cover it later.
Should I get the boxing gloves out, mate?
No. See, what people misunderstand, I'm an ex-veterinary surgeon, but I was never in the veterinary business. I was in the people business managing pets.
Mm.
Your tradies are not in whatever they do. That's the how they do it.
Mm.
The pipe to which they arrive and the lifestyle which they develop is 100% dependent on their ability to lead people. So that brings up the next thing. What's the definition of a leader? And what I run with is a leader is somebody who gets others to do what you want them to do because they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't know that, you're a boss. They're going to turn up late. They're going to have a high staff turnover, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then you come back to me and say, the millennials are hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
You get those millennials that get a dream, a reason for them coming to work, and they'll turn up early and they'll do the whole gig. And so how we teach that is simply an acronym form: family, occupation, recreation, and motivation. Okay. And so what happens, and it happened this morning without even realizing, mate, you got any kids? You think back on that. Yep. See, that's the best introduction happened because we played it live. Jack, 8 months old.
Yeah.
Then we do a deal. And then the only other thing that I get people to do is find a higher purpose for why they work.
Mm.
So when they had the veterinary clinics, the higher purpose was look after the animals, make the owners happy,
mm-hmm.
and the male look after itself. So you employ a brand new member tomorrow, kid straight out of school. They can understand, look after the animals, make the owners happy, and we build the rest.
Mm.
So that when it comes to a disciplining thing, and this is the important thing, is the second thing I need to know is understand that day one that Jack starts school, you'll be the best dad you can be. So if we have a higher purpose and a reason why you're at work, and something happens and I have to have a chat about it in a disciplinary manner, there's no big sticks, there's no abuse, there's no this, and it's so important to understand this. Mm. And so, mate, how does what just happened fit into us look after the animals and you being the best dad you can be?
Mm.
And then the biggest thing you can do is shut up.
Because
there's only one answer.
That's right.
There's only one answer. And then you come in, how do we fix it?
Mm.
And there's no big, you jump in the trenches with them. They will never, ever, ever do that again.
So, Trevor, there is so much in there that I could... And we will speak to, I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask you about that, but can you just take us back and give our listeners some insight into who you are and how you've come to be chatting with us today?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think I go back to grade four. Okay. Dad was a stock and station agent that someone looked after the management, probably Tonkari, Alice Springs, Darwin. And so out of that, I had such an unbelievable childhood and experiences. I've always wanted to get back to the bush. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to get back to Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
That's underlying. And that's happening. But the grade four came home from school one day, went a little border collie called Patches. Now, always at the front gate, but she wasn't there. Our house is about probably 600-800 mil off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this little dog underneath the house throwing convulsions. So I got on and pulled it out and I got her in my arms. She's shaking. And then she'd go quiet. And then she'd start up again more intensely. And when you're in grade four, mum can do anything.
Yeah.
Mm. So I'm saying to mum, fix it. She says, I can't. Why can't you? We got to find a vet. And I asked mum, what's a vet? Never heard of those three letters and that. What's a vet? Well, she died in my arms.
Mm.
And what that did was imprinted here on my heart.
Mm.
I'm going to be one of those vet things, no matter what.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you, I can sit here for 2 hours, the path I got to become a vet was ridiculous. But I strongly teach people to live 5 universal principles. Number one, nothing happens by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, his timing is always perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call his whatever you like because they don't want to be titled anyway. Number three, he'll never send you something you can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the caveat. Number four, he's got a crazy sick sense of humour.
I think our listeners will identify with that one, mate.
And number five, coincidence is he's where I remain anonymous.
Mm.
Now, see, if I can get people to live that, now you can become a witness participator and cease to be a judge.
Mm.
And so what happens then? We go to work and away it goes. So grade four, in it goes. That was Cloncurry, moved up to Darwin, Alice Springs. I had to go to boarding school in Charles Towers from Alice Springs because there's no grade 11 and 12 in Alice Springs. And finished that into uni. And see, that's why it's so important. I'm going to be one of those vet things. I did first year vet science in Townsville in 1969. Small university, so we had academic advisors.
Mm-hmm.
You can come and give me all the advice you want. I walk into this room and this dude, big black glasses, he said, I'm here, you're my academic advisor. And he said, what do you want to do? I want to do vet science. How many points did you get? I got 22, the bare minimum points to get into uni. And he looked at me and said, you're wasting your time. Now, if you don't have that heart-based dream, that bloke steals it.
Mm.
That's right.
Or you'll keep rabbit, and he's the universe. So he was a lecturer of one of three chemistries, and we had to get 150 out of 300.
Mm-hmm.
But his exam was the only exam at the start of the last term. I said, right, I'll jam this. I'll get this out of the road. And bang. And I knew that when we sat for that paper, there's nothing that it covered that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I only came top in one subject in all my whole university career. There were 176 science students, and we had to do pure science, whereas the guys in Brisbane had a modified science course. And I found out from one of the demonstrators, I got 93%. So I'm working it out, 93 from 150. I only got to get 30% the other two. But it's a done deal.
Cruising, yeah.
Way I went. And what that led to was is at the end of fourth year, I married a vet, the same year as I was, and then it was a matter of surviving.
Mm.
So if we're going to see each other, we had to set up our own clinic.
Yep.
Mm.
I went to 17 lecturers, the lecturers we had in grade in fourth year and final year. Based on your teaching, what's my chances of surviving? And 2 out of 17 said yes.
Wow.
But they were the two I respected.
Mm.
Yep.
So away we went, assuming one of us are going to pass.
Mm.
We paid rent on the premises 3 months before we graduated.
Wow.
Wow. That's a commitment.
Because once you get this, and people have dreams out in front, but rather than have dreams out in front, you've got to have that. But begin with it's a done deal and work backwards.
Mm.
Mm.
So we opened the clinic, and with a total passion, away we went. Did everything that I teach people not to do now. Never took any holidays. Never And Sally, when we got together, she didn't want any kids because every time she picked a baby up, it cried. And she could save any animal. But what happened was we opened the clinic, and it just went ballistic because we care.
Mm.
See, it's people don't care how much you know, they know how much you care. It's the little tiny things.
Very true.
She got to 30, and Chris was 40 years old. So 40 years ago, if you didn't have a baby before you were 30, they're going to be born with 3 heads and 6 tails.
Yeah.
So she's running out of options. Chris came along, and 6 years later, Bert came along. The best thing ever happened.
Mm.
Yep.
So away we went. So built these. By the time 88 came, I was 14 years, halfway through building a big veterinary hospital that we could live upstairs on. And but what happened was an old burnt-out horse vet came into the clinic. He wanted to learn a bit about greyhounds. I'd treated thousands of things, so there was no dramas. He was there Monday. He was there Tuesday. And Wednesday morning, Sally dropped Chris off from preschool. He raced past the operating table to go and raid the fridge because that's what five-year-old kids do. And this vet just put his hand up and said, can I teach you something? I said, yeah, absolutely. And all he said was, at the pace you're running at, soon that kid will be 18. And we go through life, there's forks in the road. And quite often, you're going to take the fork that's got the least amount of traffic on it to be where you are because you followed your heart.
Mm.
So then the universe comes into play. A mate I had one cup of coffee with like 4 years earlier turns up in Townsville and he got involved in network marketing. And see, I had a go for a run in the mornings and I've had two callings, if whatever that means. One of them has to be incredibly strong for a very short period of time. And the second one was the limitation of your future is between your ears.
Mm-hmm.
Three veterinary hospitals, farm, $500,000 in the share market, crazy stuff. And what happened was I wanted an answer. So I was looking, but the answer had to have time on one hand and a big income on the other. Because I knew I could make a huge income.
Mm.
The only model out there that does it is network marketing.
Mm.
So one cup of coffee for this guy. And then what he did, he left me a book. Because, see, the only place I could reach for help and assistance was the veterinary profession.
Yep.
We were way up the top of the teepee. And he left me a book, Seven Strategies to Wealth and Happiness by Jim Rohn.
Yep.
And that was the start. So it's absorbed it and swallowed it, sold the clinics within 12 months. And to become a full-time dad, a whole lot of financial things I did wrong. But the gig was to be a full-time dad. And so we did that. And got involved. I guess the next big thing was be very careful what you say when you're setting those dreams.
Mm.
Sally had retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be a full-time dad. On the 8th of February 2001, Sally took her life.
Oh, Trevor.
I got what I asked for.
Mm.
We became the Three Musketeers.
Mm.
See, that's why I'm adamant that what we've got our hands on is the most streetwise mental health program out there.
Mm.
Because it's simple. We've tested it for 8 years and it's just so ripe. I mean, a farmer goes every 10 days.
Yeah.
A vet goes every 3 months. A partner gets murdered by some clown every 4 days this year.
Mm.
What's going on?
Yep.
What's going on?
And it's not always as obvious, Trevor. I mean, without delving into your personal circumstances, you know, you sold practice. It sounds like, you know, financially things are okay. And it would be easy for people to think that, you know, it doesn't make sense, but it's not as obvious for those of us who have had experience with people who have struggled with their place on the earth. And Nick and I both had personal experience with that as well. And it's usually only in hindsight that we can start to put the pieces together and realize that it wasn't the obvious stuff that should have meant they were okay. There was other stuff going on that meant they weren't okay. And that's what I've found over the years with a lot of the awareness programs and mental health programs and stuff. It's perhaps a little surface level, a little too obvious, but there's more going on, as you've just alluded to. What's different about perhaps what you've learned and you know, in terms of the program that you run, Trevor?
Yeah, well, I think listening to it, introspection begets wisdom. I cannot put that in front of you enough. So to look within is to make you wiser. If you don't honour that, it'll either lower your self-worth or it'll make you feel guilty, both of which blow up tomorrow.
Mm.
Mm, that's right.
That pull up, introspection begets wisdom. What happened, I've taught this success stuff, as I said, for 30-odd years.
Mm.
And the latter came from a book by David Hawking, Letting Go, Dr. David Hawking. And if I've got an ability, it's to take a really complex thing and put it as a simple product that everybody can relate to. And so this ladder here, if you have a good look at it, it's color-coded. And how it's played, there's a QR code in the bottom. And that's 10 minutes of me to explain the ladder, because people come to our workshop, they go home with the ladder, they put it on the fridge, and people's friends say, what's that?
Mm.
They're fully disgusted in 1.5 minutes.
Yep.
So that's 10 minutes of me teaching exactly the benefits of and this, that, and other. And if you're in the dark red zone, don't hesitate to reach for medical help because you may need it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
How it works and what David Hawking said, what is held in the mind, including your subconscious, tends to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And your body simply follows it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we undo that, if you you know, your knees go or whatever happens. Okay, what's going on behind the scene? And so whenever I'm working with people and a physical thing comes up, I said, can I ask you a question? What went down emotionally 60 to 90 days ago?
Mm.
And for more than half of them, they just break out in tears.
Mm.
Male or female?
Yep.
Male or female. So, okay, that's what it is. Let's move forward. And the key to why this works, though, is so we just cover the ladder now. At any one time, the little voice in your shoulder, what is the feeling behind what you just said to yourself?
Mm.
And this ladder's got 17 runs of consciousness on it, and you may be angry. If you accept your anger, you move up to the light between green and yellow. You're operating on a different vibrational frequency, and the anger loses power.
Mm.
You may be there for 10 minutes, you may be there for 20 minutes, but you'll only be there two or three times, and away you go. What most people don't understand is it's a ladder. And to climb a ladder, so many people are in shame, then they feel guilty, and they get the top of it. Anger. Anger is the height at which they get. They do something based on that anger vibration, which then makes them shameful.
They
still climb a ladder.
Yep.
But what they don't understand, there's only two emotions. One is love, which is above courage. The one is fear, which is below courage. Now, the key to all this work, and I'll just run you past this right now, the key to all this work is when I work with people, I get them to understand the definition of a vision. Because a man without a vision will perish. Everybody knows that. So let's have a look. And the definition of vision I use is a vision is a mental image with feeling. And the with feeling makes it heart-based, of a desired future state that does not currently exist. And then I say, okay, let's play with a couple of visions. And I'll get you to visualize was having given or received, having given a dozen red roses to Jack's mum.
Yep.
He puts a smile on your face. Can't help it. Puts a magnificent smile on her face because the secret to living is giving.
Mm-hmm.
What I want you to do now, I want you to replace that. About three times every 2 years, I'd get a call, and the story behind the story is these couple, they've got a cat which is left at their place by one of their kids who's gone off to uni, not even their cat. And this cat is a proper cat that does what cat things do. One of the things that cat things do, if someone comes to the house that doesn't like cats, this bloody thing goes round and round and round and round and round. Drives them crazy. So friends come over for dinner. You usher them inside. The pussycat's doing what pussycat does. And it's a nuisance because this bloke can't stand cats. So you pick the cat up and you put it outside the door. Now the cat's cold, winter, even in Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
It goes and finds the warmest place it can to go to sleep, and that's the tray underneath the radiator fan of your friend's car because the engine's still warm.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great night. You go and ask your friends in the car. They turn the key over. Visualize that for a second.
Mm.
You can hear it. You can smell it. Da-da-da. But if you got it to me alive, I can rebuild it. There's no doubt about that. But here's the key. This is critically important. My question is, what happened to the picture of a dozen red roses?
Mm-hmm.
See, you and no one else but you have just categorically proven to you that you control how you think.
Mm.
Not the weather, not your job, boss, not you control how you think. Now, that accident happened on Sunday night, and you've just rung your son or daughter to let them know how the cat's going in the hospital. So they're going to feel really sad.
Yep.
See, it wasn't the event that made them feel sad. That was on Sunday. It wasn't until their thought process knew of the event that they chose to feel sad.
Mm.
Welcome to the ladder. Because once you understand that and hold that accountable, at any one time, where am I on this ladder? That's why I get people to put it in the fridge.
Mm.
Trevor, how do you speak to the thing that, well, I see in a lot of people is almost a state of denial around what you've just demonstrated, is that we are in control of our thoughts and therefore our feelings. And I come across people who, they acknowledge that that's a possibility for some people, but for them, it's not the case. You know, it's like, yeah, but you don't understand. I've got this going on and this going on. And how can I possibly think any differently when, you know, my staff aren't working effectively? I've lost all this money on jobs. I can't pay my bills. You know, my wife and I are more distant than we've ever been. I don't have time for the kids. And when I do, I don't want to be around them anyway. How can they possibly just, you know, click their fingers or wave a magic wand and just think differently? You know, for a lot of people, it seems almost fanciful. Well, how do you cut through that with people?
Beautiful. The best way to cut through it is put it, like I just described it, you guys, on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can talk. And then can I ask you a couple of questions?
Mm-hmm.
Lead with a question. Always lead with a question. And when they say yes, now we're on a level playing field.
Mm.
So whatever it is, it's them at the top of the teepee that have lost control of their life.
Mm.
So there's a whole myriad of ways in which you can go from there. But keep the ladder out in front. So based on what you just said, where are you on this ladder?
Mm.
And get them to own it. And they will be either worried and see all worry, all fear, it's from the rung of worry. And all anxiety is a high energy form of worry.
Yep.
So if you're anxious about it, and the other thing that's really important is to just jump in bed with them and say, mate, I understand it. I've been there. If you're under financial pressure, that's the worst cloud you can get. It just sits over you for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, forever.
Mm, that's right.
But who put you there? Didn't just shut up. What we're about is let's jump in the trenches together and we'll move you out of here.
Mm, mm.
And then I would then go back and say, you got kids? And I would know that. I probably worked with a guy. Yeah, okay, so let's go and think about what we set up.
Mm.
Let's go back and have you the best day, best dad you can for when Jack starts school. You have to go back to the dream.
Mm.
Because they're living in an ever descending energy pool below courage.
Mm.
Because they're living as a victim.
Trevor, can you talk to us a bit more about that concept? It's something I've come across a couple of times. The opposite of fear isn't courage, it's love. And vice versa. And just picking up on what you talked about before, it's almost like courage is actually the thing that changes fear to love or vice versa. You know, it flips us between the two. It's not the opposite. So can you just expand on that for our listeners a little bit, Wayne?
Okay. Here's the question. What's the only word that's ruled the world since 9/11?
It's probably an obvious one, mate.
No. What is it?
Fear. Yep.
Fear. So if we all live in fear, we create ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
We create ISIS because we're all operating the vibrational frequency of a victim.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, look at today's world, for God's sake. But as long as I can get you to put your head in the pillow at peace tonight and we throw our rock in our puddle and it just radiates out, we can change it. I mean, here's a bit of scientific information for you. It only takes a square root of 1% of the population to change it.
Mm-hmm.
So 20 people at one of our workshops, 20 squares, 400, 1%. We've influenced 40,000 lives.
Mm.
We are so close, as long as we understand, step above courage.
Mm.
And this answer is not going to come overnight because it's going to take them anywhere between 1 to 20 years to get to where they're at.
Mm.
And that's why I call all our workshops now, what's happening on your watch? See, when I'm brutally honest about it, after being married for 27 years, Sally took her life. That happened on my watch.
Mm.
And when I can get people to take that accountability, we can move mountains. Because the rest of the workshop there's only five reasons that can screw people up. Number one, what happens if there's a spent check? So they're living in the past. What happens tomorrow? You got no guarantee on. So stop worrying. But the biggest one for 95% of people, 95% of the time, in 95% of cases, is unresolved relationships.
Mm.
So the way I teach it is the bank manager rings up at 5 to 5. Like, g'day, Wiz, how are you? Puts the phone down. Why me? Why does he want to ring me? Now, if you ring him at 5:02 and say, listen, Fred, I want an appointment to see you at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning, you're at total peace.
Mm.
It's not the financial problem. It's resolving to solve the problem that brings you peace.
Mm.
And that's the third one. What goes around comes around. We all understand that. Anyone accumulates power self-destructs. So there's only five, and that's what we – and each one of them is different, so we just work it through. So at each step, so they own what we're discussing and always go back to, mate, based on where you're at, who are you going to be when Jack starts school?
Yeah, but clearly you've done a lot of your own self-work to get you to this point to be able to, A, articulate it, but, B, put it together as a workshop that people can do so they can be influenced to create their own change. Can you tell us a bit about that work you had to do yourself to get to this point?
Yeah, it came out of that run. I went for a run. The limitation of your future is between your ears. That was the start. And I was searching, absolutely searching. I was lost, but I didn't know where to go.
Mm.
And what do we do? What do we do as providers, as male? Work harder. Madness, absolutely madness. And the first thing I teach people, first thing is if you own your own business, say, what holidays do you take? which in North Queensland, the least productive month of the year is February, because the wet season, and I will not accept a holiday less than 2 weeks because you can't. You just cannot relax. So set them up, set the holidays up. I took 12 weeks off in 14 years. Six of those to get a hernia fixed. And everybody would tell me I'm a raving success. Mm-hmm. And my dad, I was.
Mm.
But the end result of it's not worth it.
Mm.
And so it's a matter of meeting them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said, introspection begets wisdom. I can teach about not having holidays, so I didn't take them. I can teach about losing my wife. I don't want you to go through that.
No.
And what I searched for, Nick, was just, and it wasn't actually craving a search. It was just interesting. It was just reading from one to one. Oh, that makes sense. This makes sense. I mean, stuff's still evolving this morning on the path we're on.
Mm.
And that's why we are ready to take this example of a mental health thing to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm prepared to work wherever it is, and we'll do it. Because, see, you mentioned it before, we can either be affected by subconscious problems, and you don't even know you don't know, which was Sally's challenge because her father's an alcoholic. You can either suppress things, they repress it if it's subconscious. You don't even know you don't know.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can suppress it, push it on the carpet, it'll go away. You can go into denial.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can process it. See, they're the only four options. Which one do you want to go on? Which way? I don't care how long you've been living in denial, because I know you're living below courage.
Mm.
But if we process it, let's have you up here. Your kids deserve it. Jack deserves it. Your partner deserves it. Let's play.
Trevor, it's I think something else that I've observed is that a lot of people, they cognitively know or agree with these sorts of principles, you know, that they would be listening to you speak through this and go, yeah, well, I don't want to be in denial and I absolutely want to process it. And, you know, there's been people in my life I lost someone very, very close to me by their own hand, unfortunately. And they said their whole life that they don't have any problems. They've worked through all this stuff and they're all good and nothing could have been further from the truth. And I think a lot of us know, in inverted commas, these principles in some way or another, but to implement them or action them or live them on a day-to-day basis is a whole nother story entirely. And often I find it's a lot of little things that we can do that mean we are being conscious of what we're doing. You know, we're choosing, and that's something that I do. You know, you keep referencing my son. You know, I started consciously being the best dad that I could be before he was even born, because that was a choice that I made.
Yep.
But for me, that looks like little things on a daily basis. It's not big stuff. And I think, again, that's where people perhaps get a little distracted or off track, is they think they have to do some transformational workshop, or they've got to, you know, do this big work to be able to actually achieve this goal that you're talking about. What's your thoughts on that, first and foremost? And also, if you agree with me and you don't have to, are there small things on a daily basis that make up this practice?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Little tiny things done every day make a huge difference over time.
Mm.
So where they are right now is they've been doing those little tiny things below courage.
That's right.
So now it's exponentially, the overwhelm heap is too big.
Mm.
Yeah.
But if you break a heap down, I mean, one of my crazy projects was on acreage, right up the hill. My mother-in-law was built a house there. I had to maintain this thing or else I could cement it in. Telstra came in and they put the cable straight up. Now that's going to wash out in 12 months. Or I can cement it. Now, what actually happened, by hand, 143 tonne of blue metal, which is 120 tonne of sand and about 26 tonne of cement powder, it takes 5.5 hours for one person to mix up one sheet of weldage. And there we go. Now, I did that straight after tearing my meniscus, and everybody wanted surgery. It was in 1992. Everybody wanted surgery. And I said, well, hang on, I don't need to have surgery. So I started this project. And after the first one, my knee was sore as, maybe they're right. Then I pulled up for a while. I said, well, you don't know until you've done two. So now we've got two down, and my knee wasn't as sore. And those huge projects gather momentum. So long as you understand, any overwhelm heap is six or seven little quadrants. And grab the smallest one, financially wise, grab the smallest one you're paying the highest interest on, and you've got a winner. And so a lot of this is I think it's coaching, as in just jump in the trenches with them and let's sort out what's going on. And bit by bit by bit, absolutely, absolutely. Because they're sitting on top of big overwhelm heap and it's just too big. How do you fix that is let's get aware of the habit patterns you've got today. So did you bounce out of bed with goose pimples? Not a hope in bloody hell. How long has it been since you've done that? I've never done that. Well, I rest my case. Because if you're a human being, present tense, not a human to be, so you can stop worrying, and not a human being, so you can let go of being guilty, you bounce out of bed, go to the mirror, look in front of the mirror and go, yes, I like what I'm looking at. And see, what happens is, this is where people make a mistake, is a vision is a mental image with feeling, desired future state. So I'm 115 kilos. I don't look at 115 kilos. I look at 100 kilos. I didn't lose the weight. Because the first three letters of the word diet, what do they spell? What's your subconscious mind? What's its role? Have you survived? It's a million times more powerful than your conscious mind. And so in front of me, yes. And then you move on to what's going to happen today to be one step closer to where you want to go. And just break it down to bite-sized chunks, because today is the only day we got. We don't want to. One of the biggest challenges that people have was that they set up tomorrow from yesterday.
That's right.
And that's a huge mistake in most cases. That's 100% a bad mistake if they're living below courage. And so what we do is, through the workshop, we go through all this stuff and have people around you. And if you study networks, if you study the SEALs, if you study SAS, they study a whole lot. They all have teams of six, you plus five. And if you've got 40 staff, the cream always rises to the surface. So just be a witness participator. Look who's coming to the surface, build them. So now this guy's got his five. And you can go through hundreds. Now, why is that so important? Because you want to know the birthdays of the individual kids. If they haven't got kids, they will be, and they're single men, they will be looking for a fishing boat, a four-wheel drive, or an off-road buggy. If you start asking questions about form, you got any kids, and you go, yeah, lights your bloody head off. He's paying too much maintenance. get out of there.
Yeah.
We want to get in the paddock where we can say, well, I believe you can do that. If you read our book, classically our book, and I was doing a session for the a big automotive maintenance mob. There were 30 tradesmen in this room, and right in front of me was a little first-year apprentice sitting on the floor so he couldn't be seen, like this. So I said to him, mate, why do you work? He said, for money. There's no emotion there.
That's right.
So then what we do, we don't tell them anything. We let them – it's like working a good sheepdog, just work them wide. So having got the money, then what? We'll get a house, because that's what his mum wants. So, mate, having got the house, then what? And then the voice changes, I'll get my bike. So what do you want? I want a Yamaha 450. I had no idea. I'm running a dirt bike, but he was. And I said to the seniors in that room, make sure between now and next week you go and get a brochure from the Yamaha shop on a 450. And what happened was, he's another young millennial. He had to do 300 or 400 of these weld-out jobs, and they just hate numbers. The hate, it's just too big. So, mate, how many you done? He said, I've done four. So, mate, that's only 296 to go. And he looked at me like it's an absolute pork chop. So, let me break it down. I said, okay, now we think about this. Where are you going to be between, how many can get done between now and smoker? Five or six? Okay, let's go for it. And at smoker, I reset it till the end of the day. Now, the next week when I came in there to catch up, he came up to me and said, when I finish this, I'm buying a dirt bike. Turns up 10 minutes early, stays 10 minutes later. No sick days because he's got a dream. It doesn't have to be there with a shift and spanner or cursed or cut or anything. And that's a major part in the leadership hierarchy to avoid silly accidents among the young ones. Really, really major.
And Trevor, I want to make the point that that kid's got a dream that means something to him. Others.
Yep.
You know, make money, get a house, that's doing stuff out of duty or what he thinks other people think he should do. And it's a big topic that we talk about here on the podcast, and it's something that most trade business owners struggle with, is how to actually motivate their team. And I feel like you've just packaged that up nicely in that little example of find out what actually means something to them.
Yep, and you'll pick it in their voice, mate. Honestly, it just. And the other thing, that there's principles I need to understand that goes with it. Number one, what other people think of you is none of your business. And if I told you, was you're a wheelbarrow, you're going to go live in the garden shed for 2 weeks?
Oh, I don't know, mate. It's 2024, Trevor. I might identify as a wheelbarrow.
I rest my case. You know, I could say something personal to you and you'd pick straight in your heart and you know, he's a so-and-so. Right. Just a bloody that's word. Right. So that's awesome, all the more important for understanding. Understanding a man without a vision will perish.
Mm.
Because what happens in big workshops, we used to have a weekly meeting to air all the grievances. That was part of it. So that you edify a senior tradesman, and so that the juniors are following him, but he's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So when you employ him, number one, competency is not the number one thing. It's number three. Loyal is number one. Disciplined is number two. Number three is competency. Number four, prepared to go the extra mile. And number five, positive mental attitude. If you hire them on their competency and they're toxic, you'll pay it. So don't hire them.
That's right.
It's just so important. Dependable is the first one. Dependable, loyal, competency, positive mental attitude, go the extra mile. And so classically, when you build a team, 5 to 6, we used to knock off at 6 o'clock, a cesarean came in. I never, ever asked the girls to stay back.
Mm.
Just went out the back and did the cesarean because they were part of a champion team.
Mm.
And champion team starts with the guy at the top. So if it's not working for you, the first thing to do is start looking in the mirror. That's the first thing. And that goes into, so when you start building the teams like this and then it starts to gather momentum, it's just a pleasure to be at work.
Mm.
And we don't have to worry about mental health issues.
That's right.
Now, all the addictions. I mean, if you understand the hormones that we inherited as cavemen, number one, dopamine. You know, dopamine is derived to lift us up. So you and I are on a hunt. We're going to get a kill for the tribe. You're the apex male. Was you get first right of women and first right of food?
Not likely, but it's a nice vision.
but I'm working there with you. I want to be fit. So we get the kill. We're coming back and I sprain my ankle, break my ankle. Mother Nature gave us a huge, huge, huge dose of endorphins. That's the first one. It's a very personal hormone. It's a hormone that hits you after 45 minutes of training and just feel bulletproof.
Mm.
This is a painkiller. We get the kill back. We go out for a hunt all day and don't even see a track. 10 o'clock next morning, you see some tracks. And we both go, yes. Dopamine lifts us up till we get the kill.
Mm.
We've got oxytocin. This is the one that really intrigued me, the love hormone. Oxytocin is, I used to put in the bitches and cats to push down the pups and bring the milk down. Beautiful. The SAS and the SEALs are driven by oxytocin. The elite fighting groups in the world. Because when you pull them together and give them recognition for an award, why did you do what you did? The only one answer, it doesn't matter what nation it is, because they would have done exactly the same thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's right.
So oxytocin, and that's why you can thank me, and I'm thanks very much, mate, I appreciate it. You touch me, high-five me, we both can lift, but every other person in the workshop gets a lift.
Mm.
That's right.
You know what the hardest thing is? The hardest thing is to get leaders to high-five.
Mm.
They want the increased production. Then they go and watch Friday night football.
Mm.
The machos, the AFL down there or rugby league up here, and they're hugging and bouncing and da-da-da-da-da because they know how important it is. Mm. Now, high oxytocin depletes dopamine. The problem with dopamine is highly, highly addictive. So any form of addiction, including work for men, but all the rest of it. And I say to people, when you get out of bed in the morning, you reach for a bottle of scotch, what are you? You're an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You get out of bed first thing in the morning, you reach for your iPhone, what are you? You're addicted.
Mm-hmm.
You're addicted. So oxytocin has a negative effect on dopamine. So what you find, addictions diminish. And then we got good old cortisone. And this is the major problem that the world's in today. And that is, as a caveman and a saber-toothed tiger up my backside, I needed cortisone to fill up my muscles with glucose because the adrenaline already kicked in, my pulse was going 200. Now I can get to the forky tree, but as a caveman, I switched it off. We don't switch it off. We drip feed it 24/7 and we call it stress.
Mm.
Yeah. Yep.
Now you don't need an immune system when there's a saber-toothed tiger up your backside.
Yeah, that's right.
And it just cortisone inhibits oxytocin, which brings the addictions back in. And the final one in the series is melatonin. That's the healing hormone. You know, there's a saber-toothed tiger walking in the front of your cave. You know, you shouldn't go into a deep sleep. So the cortisone stops you sleeping properly.
Mm.
When people can break all these things down, step at a time, and get out of bed first thing in the morning and control your dopamine. Look in front of the mirror. Shit, I like what I'm looking at. You don't have to like what's coming back in the mirror.
Mm.
But you have to give yourself the self-worth, and away you go.
Mm. It's about putting it out there.
Absolutely.
And, I have a problem with the way, well, I'll call it our industry in terms of coaching and mentoring and some of that motivational stuff, is this whole idea of fake it till you make it.
Yeah,
bullshit. And unfortunately, punters have misconstrued that, and it's not necessarily their fault. The best implementation of that I can come up with is a bit like you're saying, Trevor, you know, look in the mirror in the morning and go, yes, I don't have to like what I see, but if I put it out there, I fake it, eventually it manifests.
Yep.
After creating that as a habit, whether it's doing the mirror thing, whether it's, you know, going to the gym when it's 5 degrees outside and you really don't feel like it, I don't have to love it, but if I go and do it and I fake it, ultimately in time, our bodies actually flick over to, no, this is who I am. And it becomes reality. So I think for a lot of people.
What sets that off, mate, is you get in front of the mirror, the very first day that Jack starts school, this is the dad that's walking across. Then you go and do your training.
That's right.
The visions, it's in our book. I helped a young guy win the world open water ski titles. Our book's entitled The Last 1%. Mm-hmm. And where that came from, this young bloke, he's an Australian champion, no doubt. He was a good skier. But during that first conversation, I said, mate, I know nothing about water skiing, but I know an awful lot about the last 1% between your ears.
Mm.
And he said, I'll grab that. Now, that was 1997. He won the world title. And the things that you talk about a vision, when I started working with him, because one of the biggest what happens in these guys that ski for an hour out in the ocean at about 85, 95 miles an hour, it's a nasty sport. You fall, broken neck, or pull a brachial plexus out and get a dead arm. So I'm working with this guy. I said, hey, he could win the world title, win the first three races, and break his neck in the fourth one.
Yep.
They have four races, a race every 2 days. And so I thought, oh, that's easy. We just win all four. I didn't know. I'd never been to one of the carnivals. So that's what we put out there. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the first male athlete ever to win a straight series, all set up by someone who knows nothing about the sport.
Mm.
But Wayne grabbed hold of the vision. We lost touch in 97 and went on with life. And then when this COVID thing came, we had to write a book. I got back in touch with him. He went on and won 5 world titles, 3 in ocean going water skiing and 2 in wakeboarding.
Mm.
He's never fallen off because the principle's a principle.
I should have come and spoken to you before I went kneeboarding behind a jet ski. Buggered my shoulder properly.
Yeah, well and truly, mate. Very
but clearly it was what was going on between my ears or not.
Yeah. So this whole gig is simple.
Yep.
I never, ever tell people it's easy because it's not.
No.
You've got neural highways going in there, which is so deeply entrenched, it's probably come set up since you're a little tiny kid. And then the last part of all that we do is help people reprogram their subconscious. And because that was set up during your mum's conception. Mum was stressed during pregnancy. You were born stressed.
Mm.
The first 7 years, we were at a different consciousness level as a download. So that's mum, that's dad, that's his car, that's this, that's that. Had to learn a very complex language. But unfortunately, what went in by those who know no better is you're a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
Little boys are seen, not heard. Little boys don't cry and all this crap. And then they go and test it in their teenage years. And away we go. And I guess the other big for me right now is understanding and really, really zooming in on these telephone, on the phones.
Mm.
It's really, there's an incredible book called The Anxious Generation. Instagram, 2010, Facebook bought it, 2020, divorce, the suicide rate in young teenage girls went up 164%.
Mm.
Because now for the first time I could look at myself and take a photo, then I put it out there.
Mm.
And the ones that are jealous give me a hard time, the ones that don't, and so on and so on and so on. And they don't have the frontal cortex development to handle it. Dolly was 14.
Mm.
And so that's the key. See, this is all part of the mental health gig. And it's we do a lot of stuff on relationships as well. Why is it? I mean, it's 2 days, you can afford to give a fair bit of cheat and let's play.
Trevor, we could go for 2 days, but we won't because I don't think our listeners have got that much endurance from their ear holes. I want to ask you one last question before we do wrap up today. If you had 1,000 trade business owners in a room, what's one piece of advice you would like to leave them with?
Love is spelled T-I-M-E. That's it. When that little child is 5, you cannot relive their 3rd year.
Mm.
Mm.
They measure home by who's in it, not by the number of bedrooms and the number of bloody cars parked at the front.
Mm.
You tuck him into bed at night. You ask him, what'd you do today, mate, to make the world a better place? Separate. You're not a bad boy. Chris, I strongly disapprove of what you've done, but I love you as a person.
Mm.
You maintain their self-worth and you be that strength of love, because love's the strongest force out there.
Mm.
And the big, tough, macho guys, they don't understand that. So love is spelt T-I-M-E. There we are.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks,
cracking way to wrap up our chat. Appreciate everything you've shared, mate. If listeners want to go and find out more about your book or your program, what's the best place to go and do that?
My partner is the systems lady, so she can...
Great admission, Trevor.
If they want a copy of the ladder, www.topcats.com.au/the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
If they want to get a copy of our book, just www.topcats.com.au.
Topcats.com.au. Love it.
Yep. And so, yeah.
Well, Trevor, thank you for your time today, mate. Thanks for sharing so openly about your story and some of your amazing tips. I think there's heaps and heaps of actionable stuff in there for our listeners. As we said, if you want to find out more about Trevor and the team and what they're doing, topcats.com.au. And, mate, all the best with rolling out the ladder.
It's been a pleasure, mate. You probably gather I'm passionate about this. We didn't even go into what it takes to be. Anyway, it's just flowed. Absolutely, because I bat for the kids.
Mm.
You mightn't like it, but that's what the gig is.
Mm.
And whether you like it or you don't like it, was Jack's going to start a great one. Who his father is 100% dependent on was. And a lot of these guys do it out of ignorance.
Mm.
Because, see, their parents worked 100 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give them a program that they can follow, that they can relate to. So thank you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor.